This is David Duke. And this is David Duke, and this is the David Duke Internet Web Radio Broadcast, broadcasting to the entire world with news and information of vital importance to Europeans and people of European descent, no matter where they may live upon the earth. And of course, this program is important for all people, because the power of Jewish supremacism is a power that reaches much farther than simply the Gaza Strip or the West Bank, or the terrible crime, murder, destruction of the Israeli invasion of Lebanon. It is a power that reaches in her own living rooms around the world through their power in Hollywood and media. It is a power that affects the so-called clash of civilization, which is driving the world toward war and ultimately a destruction of the higher values of mankind. We need to discuss Jewish extremism. It seems to be valid to discuss forms of racism or racial extremism or ethnic supremacy among any people around the world. It's fine to expose white supremacism, and I, by the way, I'm opposed to that principle. I believe in equal rights for all. I want to preserve my heritage, but I don't believe that whites should rule over anybody else. It's fine to talk about other forms of ethnic supremacy and to expose them and to criticize them, but for some reason it's not allowed to talk about Jewish extremism. And yet these Jewish extremists are not in some backwater area of Darfur. You know, they are in fact in the boardrooms of much of our media. They are in fact the writers, producers, and directors of a lot of our Hollywood movies. They are in fact setting American policy in the Middle East through these extremist Jewish neocons such as Richard Perle and Wormser and Abrams and Fife and the rest. So these issues are absolutely vital. This book, Jewish Supremacism, deals frankly with this issue. It's well documented, and this is in fact the final part, the final spoken word part of my book, Jewish Supremacism. I think you're going to find it interesting. This chapter is dealing with their claims of ethnic superiority, and it deals morally with some of the questions we have in confronting Jewish supremacy and dealing with it honestly. Are we being immoral to basically defend ourselves from this radical racist ideology? I don't think we are being immoral. I think it is moral for us to defend our rights and heritage, as it is for us to defend the rights and heritage of all peoples. So here we go. This is the final part of my book, the audiobook of Jewish Supremacism, and I hope that you enjoy it, and I'll be back with you in just a few minutes. The next section is, are Jews superior? What about intelligence? How do Jews compare to Europeans as a whole and to select European groups? There's been a fair amount of study on the issue, primarily by Jewish researchers. They show a higher general IQ for Jews, but the difference comes almost exclusively from the verbal parts of IQ tests. Most studies show that Jews have a markedly higher verbal IQ, but that Europeans often score higher on more abstract and spatial components of IQ. Brown found Jewish children higher in verbal IQ and Scandinavian children higher in visuospatial IQ. Levinson found the same thing among Jewish and Gentile children in a 1960 study, and Backman shows significantly higher verbal IQs and significantly lower IQs for Jews on visuospatial reasoning. That Jews seem to be superior in the verbal mental skills seems perfectly consistent with their evolutionary strategy. Verbal skills are obviously important for communication, commerce, teamwork, administration, and mediation, all of which were vitally important in the societies in which they prospered. Werner Maas, a celebrated historian of European Jewish history, has even suggested, citing studies from Germany early in the century, that Gentile manufacturers tend to be artisans, whereas Jewish manufacturers tend to be from trading or banking families. He argues that the character of Jewish involvement in manufacturing in Germany of the 19th century was, quote, less an outright innovation or invention than in special aptitude for economic mediation in the forms of the export of German goods, of secondary innovation, technology transfers to the introduction to Germany of processes and methods observed abroad, and new techniques for the stimulation of demand, unquote. Richard suggests that visuospatial abilities and verbal abilities are negatively correlated and that more of the cerebral cortex is devoted to either one set of abilities or the other. Another researcher, Schwarzbach, in his book, The Mediator, suggests that Jews are natural mediators in a multi-ethnic, multi-religious, multinational environment and that natural clashes between the antagonistic groups produces a tremendous demand for mediation. Such mediation finds expression in law, negotiation, arbitration, stock exchange, and government administration, all of which are responsive to Jewish verbal skills and intelligence. Jews have received a disproportionately large percentage of awards for scientific and cultural enterprise, from Academy Awards to Pulitzers to Nobel Prizes. The significant Jewish presence is striking. Disproportionate Jewish success in winning scientific and cultural awards is a reflection of both their abilities and their team strategy. Both the Academy Awards and the Pulitzer Prizes have a large contingent of Jewish voters who have from an early age been taught to favor their own. As mentioned in my chapter on Zog, Jews are especially prone to join the governing bodies of any social organization in which they participate and thus would tend to increase their ability to recognize and reward their own in their respective professions. Additionally, the Jewish-dominated news and entertainment media consistently elevate their own for praise and recognition. Barbara Streisand may not have been the best pop singer in the country, but she certainly became such according to the Jewish press. Schindler's List may not have been the best movie made in 1993, but it meshed perfectly with Jewish social and political objectives. The appalling choice of Jewish terrorist Menachem Begin for a Nobel Peace Prize depended on a groundwork laid by the Jewish media around the world. Even in the scientific sphere, in an era of tremendous scientific advancement and great numbers of deserving researchers, publicity and media promotion of a scientist's work is now probably just as critical for the earning of a scientific award as the work itself. And in this area, Jewish scientists have a built-in promotional advantage. Even today, with the geneticists and psychologists rapidly proving the crucial role of heredity and race in intelligence and behavior, the Jewish media continue to tout the behavioral environmentalist viewpoint, except, of course, for Jews. The media give fringe egalitarians such as Lewontin, Kamen, and Gould preference over the quieter but more cogent scientists. As I pointed out earlier, the three most influential Jews of the 19th and 20th centuries were Karl Marx, Sigmund Freud, and Franz Boas. All three were highly intelligent men, yet each had a catastrophic effect on European society. Karl Marx laid down the foundations for the most destructive and murderous ideology of all time, communism. Sigmund Freud undermined the foundations of the family and fundamental Christian and Muslim morality, ushering a host of maladies and human suffering. Franz Boas was the anthropologist, father of the egalitarian movement, which is the primary weapon in the destruction of both the ethnic loyalty and the very existence of every genotype on the planet who might oppose Jewish supremacy. The next section is the ultimate gauge. Even the so-called moderate wing of Judaism preaches a Jewish supremacy of morality and intellect. In an article in Reform Judaism retitled Relax, It's Okay to Be the Chosen People, Arthur Hertzberg, the editor, and Aaron Hurt Mannheimer discussed their victimization as youngsters at the hands of Christians. They assert the specialness of Jews, even of those liberal Jews who don't want to admit it. In the article, they quote the words from the founder of the Israeli state, David Ben-Gurion, and I quote, "My concept of the messianic ideal and vision is not a metaphysical one, but a socio-cultural moral one. I believe in our moral and intellectual superiority, in our capacity to serve as a model for the redemption of the human race. This belief of mine is based on my knowledge of the Jewish people and not some mystical faith. The glory of the divine presence is within us, in our hearts, and not outside of us." Unquote. It would be interesting to see the reaction if the President of the United States made a statement that he believed in the moral and intellectual superiority of the white race. Not only does the Ben-Gurion statement show a supremacist attitude, it also shows that his sense of Jewish superiority is not born out of believing that they are, quote, chosen by God, but arises simply from a self-chosen egotism. Before self-proclaimed assertions of Jewish superiority can be taken seriously, it is important to remember that the ultimate gauge of worthiness is creative achievement and historical performance. The European record of Mediterranean European mankind and Alpinic and Nordic Mediterranean European mankind is magnificent. Gentiles laid the foundations of astronomy, physics, mathematics, engineering, biology, geology, and Western medicine. It was our Egyptian ancestors who designed the pyramids, our forefathers who built the Parthenon and the Pantheon. It was our Greek ancestors who wrote the first novel, developed drama to an art form, and gave the world the philosophy of Socrates and Plato. It was our race that unlocked the secrets of the Copernican universe, our folk who built the Roman Republic and wrote the Magna Carta, the Declaration of Independence, and the Constitution of the United States. It was our people who created the great art of ancient Greece and unleashed the beauty of the Renaissance. Michelangelo had our blood in his fingers as he reached out to God on the ceiling of the Sistine Chapel, and in Leonardo's hands, our blood and unique DNA pulsed as he created from cold stone the warm beauty of the Madonna and Child. From our genes came the compositions of Bach, Mozart, Beethoven, and Wagner. Our people invented the automobile, the airplane, the steam engine, the internal combustion engine, the jet engine, electric light, telephones, radios, and cameras, and even the powerful tools now used as weapons against us, the motion picture camera and television. Men of our heritage gave us the building blocks of the computer age, the semiconductor, the transistor, and the integrated circuit. Our people developed the math and physics and the chemical propulsion that enabled us to leave our footprints on the moon. I could go on and on recounting the great achievements of our heritage and the greatness of the Egypt of Ramses II, the Greece of Pericles, or the Rome of Caesar, or the England of Shakespeare. There was almost no Jewish influence. Western civilization would have still scaled the heights without them. But would we have plumbed the depths of Marxism, Freudianism, and Boasian egalitarianism without them? The difference between Jews and Gentiles finds expression in the kinds of films made by Walt Disney and the type made by the current Jewish head of Disney Studios, Michael Eisner. While both Disney and Eisner made technically proficient films, Disney made films accenting the beauty and nobility in man and the wonders of nature. Eisner steered Disney away from the nature film business and toward degenerate films such as The Crying Game and The Priest, two films wallowing in sexual deviance and depravity, films that Walt Disney would not have even watched, much less produced. While the classical Greeks and the Europeans of the Renaissance were producing great art and sculpture celebrating the ideal beauty of the human form, Jews rejected art as graven image. Now they sponsor and promote degenerate art that prizes the misshapen and the weird over the well-formed, the noble, and the heroic. And they dominate the pornographic rackets that explore the lowest depths of human degradation. While the Europeans' Faustian spirit has penetrated the deepest oceans and the highest mountains and even ventured into space, the Jews have seldom been pioneers. While we revere the soil, the earth, the very natural world by which most Europeans and the rest of the people of the earth have gained their daily bread until very recent times, the Jews have, for 2,000 years, sucked their sustenance from the golden calf of a soulless and parasitic urban life. While Freud held up the genital and excretory organs as the keys to the meaning of life, the Gentile Carl Jung dismissed Freud and developed the concept of the racial soul and spirit. While Jews still enshrine the dictum of an eye for an eye, the Europeans and other peoples of the world embrace, perhaps dangerously, the doctrine of turn the other cheek. In terms of intelligence, Jewish supremacists have the verbal dexterity to have earned Jesus Christ's referral to them as the fathers of the lie, but in the spatial skills that give us our sense of art and farsightedness, that give us balance and wholeness, we excel. They are, in general, a fast-talking, clever people, well-versed in the arts of manipulation and mediation, but they are certainly not superior in the qualities of character that have created the greatness and sublimity of our own people. The Jewish genotype has certainly been resilient and adaptive, and they may yet, if we allow it, inherit our earth as their dominion. The contest, though, is far from over. There is a wealth of wonderful genetic material in our people that shall yet prove itself worthy of survival. When our people awaken and apply our genius, our idealism, and our courage to the struggle for our survival, when we wake up to the reality of this ethnic struggle and preserving our own genotype, we will prevail. But while Jewish people have adapted, we have created. We've created both technology and art. We have found great beauty in both the body and the soul. We have embraced both God and nature, science and religion, and we've learned how to balance both government and freedom. The ultimate ethnic clash of these diametrically opposed genotypes and cultures fast approaches with the new millennium. Jewish supremacist will to power pushes them on to domination as it has for the last 2,000 years. Their evolutionary strategy has been perfected to the point that Europeans and all other races now suffer under Jewish hegemony in many ways on a global scale. They have occupied the seats of supreme power in the United States, the only superpower, and they've turned the federal government against its founding majority in the United States and used America as a weapon on a global scale. They don't hesitate to use it to enforce their agenda around the world. We must acknowledge their present political and social power, but we must also know that their power has come at the cost of the devolution of our civilization. Failure to defy this power can only lead to our eventual extinction, and this looming genocide gives our task the importance of a life or a death struggle, one that has urgency for our people and truly for all peoples and nations upon the earth. In the last 10 years, I have seen a great awakening all over the world. Two factors have led to this awakening. First, the Jewish supremacists have committed their age-old folly of simply going too far. They have become so flagrant that millions of people are beginning to see them as they really are. Secondly, The Internet has democratized information. Jewish media conglomerates no longer have a monopoly on news or thought or opinion. People can now judge, in many ways, for themselves whether an argument makes sense or not, whether it's grounded in fact or folly. They need no Jewish supremacist high priests to determine their reading matter or their opinions. Electronic mail and communication spread information at almost the speed of light. Websites such as my own, davidduke.com, now reach millions of people all over the world, while the truth about Jewish supremacism continues to be spread and grow around the world. Of course, those who speak out effectively against them can expect every kind of attempt at repression, using all the capabilities at their disposal. It must not be forgotten that they are as ruthless as they are powerful. To defeat them will require many sacrifices. But freedom truly has always demanded such. No matter what fate awaits me, I will continue to do my duty. I will continue to tell the truth about the greatest threat to mankind, Jewish supremacism. Long ago, I decided that I would never surrender my people's freedom to Jewish supremacists, even if that struggle would risk my own freedom. My resolve has not been lessened by the difficulties that I've endured or that those that I know lay ahead of me. Whatever fate that my unprincipled opponents may bring upon me, I will not be deterred from the cause of heritage and freedom that still illuminates my life. As long as I have breath and ability, I will not be silent. I will endeavor to fight for European Americans, Palestinians, and indeed for the fundamental human rights of all the peoples of the earth. Together, we must bravely face and fight the evil specter of Jewish extremism and supremacism. The time is late, but we have a super weapon in the struggle for our freedom, the sword of truth. I beseech you, don't let the truth lay silent. Use your courage to give it voice. Let the shining sword of truth light the way to your freedom. Well, that's it, ladies and gentlemen. That's the end of my audiobook of Jewish supremacism. It's been a long project. We've been doing this now for about 2 months. These book sections have been free to download for any people anywhere in the world. And I appreciate the fact that you are downloading the book and spreading it around to your friends and neighbors with this commentary. We are going to produce a commercial version of this book available on CD in MP3 format. And it's really going to be over 17 hours of spoken word on this book, a veritable higher education on this subject. And we're going to also make it available for download soon. Compact, it's actually 500 megabytes, so if you have a high-speed connection, it's practical for you. If you don't, it's not too practical to download it that way. But it's going to be in a nice MP3 format, which you can listen to on your CD players. Most CD players today have the ability to play MP3. And also, of course, you can hear it on your computers, your iPods, your MP3 players, and the like. But we are producing that book now, and it will be available very, very shortly. I hope that you've gotten a lot out of this book. Remember, the documentation, the data is available with the citations, and there are 669 of them in this book. They're available in my printed book, Jewish Supremacism. And I hope all of you who've heard this book in audio format will take a moment and order the printed version as well. And remember, please, that your contributions and your support enable the work that I do every day. That's how I'm able to work almost literally around the clock on these ideas because of your support. Your contributions are needed. Those of you who would like to, we'd appreciate you remembering us in your will, our bequest, or even in your insurance policies. That's another thing too that can help us, that your ideas and someone who believes as you believe and who speaks for you will be supported even after your death. I guess that's a pretty macabre subject. Nobody wants to think about their death, but all of us will go sooner or later. But that's one way you can help the cause, and some people who've been unselfish in that way and supported us that way, it's been a help for our cause too, and our ability to get out and do the things that we're doing. We don't have any great angels supporting us. We certainly don't have any big Jewish backers like the other side politically. So we really depend upon you, and maybe sometime there's going to be somebody listening to this broadcast who's touched by it and moved by it, and who can really help us significantly. And I hope that there are people out there listening who can do it, and some of you literally could write a check for $100,000 or $1 million. You know, I guess I'm not going to hold my breath for that to happen, but some people could do that, which would, you know, exponentially expand our work and enable us to reach so many more people. But let me tell you, those $25 and those $100, they help us do this work and help us work day to day to get the message out around the world. Well, thanks so much for all your support, and we will continue with the David Duke Internet Web broadcast tomorrow. And it seems kind of strange that I'm not going to be doing the audio version of Jewish Supremacism come tomorrow. Thanks so much, and I'll look forward to being with you then. Bye-bye.
This has been a David Duke Worldwide Web Radio broadcast. For more information and to support our vital work, please visit www.davidduke.com.